Hello, race fans. Welcome to Short Track Guys Podcast, brought to you by ShortTrackExclusives.com. I'm your host, Thomas Battis, alongside two other Short Track guys and good friends of mine, Jim Pokrant, driver of the 07 CantQuitFishing.com sportsman, here locally at Fire Flag Speedway, and Ted Baber, Ted Baber Video Productions, also locally here at Pensacola Fire Flag Speedway. Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening.
What's happening?
Well, we're going to get to you right away, Jim. You're going on a week now with the points lead here in the sportsman class because of some issues that happened, I guess, the last time you were out. But how is that points lead fitting your schedule?
That feels pretty good to be the points leader. I should be a little further out. There's some little controversy involving some things that happened last week, and there's also some controversy involving what the 00 was thrown out for. And I think that that needs to be addressed by the Speedway and not me. But the point being, I am the points leader by 18 over Daryl McDonald, the third, and the former points leader and five-time feature winner, the 00 of Brandon Fowler. Nothing against Brandon personally. We just race each other hard, but there's no way that car should win the way it does. Just my opinion. You know, being a guy that's raced for 28 years, it's hard to believe. We had a guy named Steve Butchert that used to wear us out, but Steve would win by a couple of car lengths, not a straightaway. So
right,
there's some controversy there, but, you know, I'm not going to go there. We're just going to get my car as best as can because it was wrecked in the last race after the race was over by Jonathan Langham. And we had to do some repairs, and we got it back together. It ain't pretty, but it's should be pretty fast tomorrow afternoon. I should take the car out to Five Flags. They're going to have a little bit of a practice session, so I'm going to take her out and shake her down and make sure everything's hunky-dory. And I've been talking to my setup guy, and we're going to try some different stuff and see if we can't get that thing to beat that car.
Yeah. What, do you got tires in the shop, or are you going to use the same old tires that you have, or you got some spares or something laying around you're going to throw on there just to kind of shake it down?
Yeah, I usually keep a set that I practice on, and we have a two-tire rule in our class. We turn two in, a track holds them, we get to buy two more. Well, at the end of the next race, those two tires are still usually usable. So I try to integrate them in, and plus I help out a couple of buddies of mine, and I try to keep them in practice tires. You know, Ben Cranford and his pure stock, you know, he don't have a lot of tires, so I throw him as many used ones as I can to help him, you know, get practice. And practice is where it's at. You're not going to go on that racetrack and do anything. And my teammate, I'm hoping we'll get him out there tomorrow. We got to put a fuel cell in his car. Went to take his fuel cell and fix some stuff, and it was brittle and coming apart, so we threw it away and we're putting a new one in that car. So, and we had some other issues. We found the sway bar bolt broke and a couple little things on his car, so he should be much better this Friday night.
Yeah, for those out there that or maybe just getting into the racing scene or listening to names and procedures and parts and stuff, that it doesn't take but maybe a bolt and a washer to be loose for the car not to be right.
Oh, exactly. You know, your sway bar is critical. How much tension you have on the sway bar, and if the bar comes loose, well, then you have no tension and it feels like it wants to pick the left front up. My crew chief one time, Frank Utzi, who is now my spotter, we were out there practicing one day, and I said, man, the car just feels like it's rolling over. He was supposed to set the sway bar and didn't, and it was like 3 inches of slack. So I go in the corner, the car would just get over on the right rear like it was trying to lift the left front up like a dirt car.
Right, and that's how crucial it is. I mean, the nuts and bolts and everything needs to be tight and to spec. And I remember a long time ago in a Prolate model tech inspection after the race, I was in pits, and I walked down, and I think somebody finished second. I can't remember his name. As long a time ago, but I asked them about the tolerance, and he looked at me, and I was like, well, what are you looking at? And I was like, what is the tolerance? And he said, there is no tolerance in winning. And if you're not spot on, if you don't have this stuff buttoned down, if you don't have it dispec where the car handles, you don't finish in the top three.
Well, in the late model, that's very true. But a car like mine, the driver can make a difference. The driver can actually make up for it. Like in the old Cup days, back in the 80s, you know, you'd hear Darrell Waltrip or Kelly Yarbrough tell their crew chief, just get it close and I'll make the difference, because you were on a bias ply tire, you could throw the car around. When they went to the radial tire, that's why the older guys like Earnhardt and them had a hard time winning right away, because once a radial comes out from under you, you're done. You're going to crash. And we still run on bi-supply tires. You can throw the car around and try something different driving style-wise if the car's not doing what you want it to do, and make a difference. You just got to have that feel in the seat of your pants, man. If you don't feel it in your butt,
right?
You know, you don't know what's going on, and that's just, you know, that to me, that's the way it is. If I don't feel it, then I've got issues.
Well, Ted, have you been in a race car?
No. Actually, not. I will tell everybody, I'll admit that I have not been in one, and it's just, it's something I've always wanted to do, but it's always been one of those, it's just a little bit too much money, a little bit too far out there for me to be able to get to it. But I just wanted to pick up on the tire situation. That could be a situation coming up here very shortly, because there are some problems with production. Hoosier's having some major issues. I wonder, it's going to be difficult. It could get really difficult for people to be able to practice and race if they don't get the production numbers up somewhat.
Well, right. A lot of the late model teams now they're limiting you, like that last Blizzard race, to one set of practice tires. That's all you get. Right. You don't get five sets of tires to practice on, one set to qualify on. They're having to limit it. And from my understanding, from what I've heard and the people I've talked to about this, it's not that they're out of tires. It's they're having trouble getting them produced because of a few material problems and also getting people to come to work. And that, you know, goes to paying people to stay home, and people are staying home and not working. And because of the COVID, they got behind. And from what I understand, it's not that they're that short. They're trying to build up a inventory, and then they'll start shipping full orders. But they can't ship a full order to you if you're going to cut somebody else off. So they're rationing tires right now.
It's a balancing act.
Right. Yes, exactly. Well, exactly.
So how is that going to affect you Friday night?
Well, it all depends on what kind of tires we have. The biggest problem we have is, you know, I run a certain size tire, and I take my a lot of people do it with a measuring tape. I do it with a stagger stick. I go to H on the Hoosier and just go around each tire and check them. And I try to get mine, you know, whatever size that I want, and I get two of them that big, and then I put them on the rims, blow them up to 25 pounds, and then check them, and then I decide where I want to put them on the car. Along with the two used ones we have to turn in, you know, then we got to try to get our stagger right. And there's nights it's not going to be perfect, but, you know, I get on the wheel and just get it done.
Right. Explain to our listeners what stagger is.
Stagger is the difference in the circumference of the tire from your outside tire to your inside tire, your right side tire to your left rear tire, or your right front tire to your left front tire. It's the difference in circumference. Like, say the right rear is 86 and your left rear is 84, you have 2 inches of stagger. The left rear tire is 2 inches smaller than the outside tire. It's an old theory that you run on a banked racetrack and you take a cup and you roll it on a table, flat table, where it's going to make a circle. Well, it's the same thing with a race car with a locked rear end, which means both axles are pulling at the same time. And when you get on the throttle, you want the car to turn. Well, if you have two of the same size tires in the rear and you go into the corner, it's going to go straight. So you want the bigger tire on the right rear, it makes the car turn. In the front, we use a little bit of stagger because it's independent suspension. We use the stagger for cross, which is cross weight, which helps the car tight or loose.
Right. So is there a rule for stagger? Do you have like a dimension that you have to stand by?
I try to get between, I'm not going to say, because, you know, if I tell people out there and they hear this, then they're going to go in there and buy up all the tires that are the size that I want. So I'm not going to tell you what I do, but I do have a size that I look for, and I'll measure. Hell, there's nights I'll go through 15 tires before I find two that I like. Mm. It's because they have to be bigger. Because you got to consider that when I turn the two tires, are usually the new tires that go on the car on the right side. So I take the right sides off, I put them in the tire shed, and I let the air out of them so they'll shrink a little bit. And then when I go get my new tires mounted, I blow them up to 15, the new one's up to 25, and then I get on the trailer with the stagger stick and my marker pen, and I try to figure out how I want to make the car handle. Then once we get the tires on it, we take it across the scales one time just to make damn sure that, you know, the numbers look pretty good, because you don't want to be over on left. We have a left side weight rule, 53%. You don't want to be over on that.
Yep.
And you don't want to be underweight. So we want to make damn sure that we take it across there and everything checks out. That way we know at the end of the night, if they run us across there, we're going to be good.
Right. And that's with the driver in the car.
Yes. We weigh the car with the driver.
And you've got fuel in it too. So it's race ready when you go across the scales just to get the numbers right.
Yeah. And you want your fuel, what you want to try to do is get your fuel, because we're allowed a pound per lap burn off. In other words, if it's a 25 lap race, we have to be 3,100 pounds. We can be 30 75 to be legal. So we try to get it as close as we can, because every pound out of that car makes a difference in horsepower. The less weight that the motor has to pull, the more horsepower it makes.
Right, so, I get it.
You know, and a big guy like me, I'm 272 pounds, so, you know, it's got to pull me too. So we got, you know, and if we'll be over on left, I got to be real careful of, you know, eating too many cannolis and getting my fat butt in that car and gaining too much left side weight. So there's a lot of, you know, give and take when it comes to that.
And just throw your leg over the drive shaft.
Yeah.
A lump right there and make up for that.
We can't do that anymore. We used to be able to. We'd have people grabbing the roll bars and pulling themselves up in the seat and leaning all the way with their heads almost out the passenger window like, what am I doing? Yeah, knock that off, sit in your seat. I've been tossed for that one time. In the 27 years I've been on a racetrack, I've been tossed out of tech one time, and it was for a tenth of a percent too much left side weight. It was so frustrating. I mean, it's like the two cars that finished in front of me were illegal, and they knew it. And those guys were even going, come on, guys, you're really going to throw Jim out for that? But, you know, I was wrong. I took my lumps and went home without a trophy.
Well, it works out that one way or the other. You know, you can't have it both ways. Either you're going to be legal or you're not. And, you know, it's black and white. Very little gray.
It depends on who you are, though. There's a little, yeah, there's a little malfeasance going on out there. And it ain't on Ricky Brooks. I'm not going to ever badmouth that man. He does his job. But I hate to put a dig on a promoter, but when a promoter has his hands in the tech area, that's wrong. That's not the way it should be, because I teched at Flemington Speedway, and that's one of the first things I told the promoter when he hired me. I said, dude, this is one of my main stipulations. If I throw somebody out, you do not pay them. You do not give them a trophy. You send them home. They'll come back. He said, I'm not going to do that to you. I said, okay. And then we're understanding, because that happened in Mobile with the Day brothers. They both had 48-pound crankshafts, and Ricky checked them and weighed them. They were illegal, and he threw them out, and Rick Crawford at the time was the promoter at Mobile, gave them their championships and their trophies, and Ricky walked in there, handed them the stuff for Mobile and said, I quit, won't ever come back here, and he didn't.
I remember the picture of, I don't remember which one of the days it was, holding the crankshaft in one hand. I'm going, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's legit.
Well, anybody knows anything about small block Chevys, and I'm not a guru. Some people know that a stock small block Chevy crankshaft weighs 52 pounds, not 48 pounds. They've been cut on. And right. What they do is they drill holes in them, and then they refill them with or they put a plug in there so they're light. There's ways of finding it, but I'm just saying that we need a tech crew out there that's going to stand up, and we need a promoter, and I love the Bryants. I'm not digging on them as much as I should. They're great people, and they do a great job at the racetrack, but Tim should not have his hand in the tech area. When the tech man calls him and says, hey, I threw out the 07, or I threw out the 00, or I threw out the 36, he should go, okay, just let me know. I'll call him up there and tell him to take care of the checks, because you can't get involved in that. You just can't. It's just, it's dumb. Right. Sorry. Just my opinion, and like I said, this is me talking as somebody that's been racing for a lot of years and who has been a tech man and dealt with promoters and dealt with crap. It's just, to me, it's ridiculous.
And so, it's a thankless job. It's not something you can, you know, just not anybody can do it.
No, and I did it. I've had people in my face, you know, cursing me. I've had people threatening to whip my behind for throwing them out. I've had some rough times doing it, it's been brought to my attention that somebody's thinking about wanting me to do it at another racetrack or at a racetrack again. And I just don't know if I want to deal with that stress, because I'm going to tell you something, that is a stressful job. And Ricky is one of the most calm. I've seen people cussing him like a dog, and he just stands there and goes, okay, all right, well, you're done anyway, so go load your stuff up and go home. You know what I mean? It's a tough job. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, I've done it. It sucks when you get some guy screaming and cussing in your face, and you have to call security to tech, please. Cop comes there, what's going on here? Well, this clown here, well, he show him the gate. See you later. You know, don't come back. And the next week, they're sitting at the gate waiting to get in. You know, it's ridiculous, but it's all part of it.
From our previous episodes, it seems that everything's working to your favor, because you've been preaching about winning the championship, and you're in the lead. Now you've got, what, 6 races left, which includes the Night of Champions. You've got the points lead by 18.
Yep.
And now it's just a matter of taking care of business and just kind of stay clean, keep the fenders on it, and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we're going to have to do. I mean, we got to run like we've been running, qualify good, run in the top 3, and just keep digging. That's all we can do. And, I mean, the chips will fall where they may. I mean, I'm excited. And, you know, after the mess last week, I come close to wanting to just hang up the helmet and quit. But I don't know. There's no quitting me. I want a purple jacket, and I'm going to dig and see if I can't get one.
Well, I'm pulling for you, and everybody is. And you've got a lot of fans out there, whether you know it or not.
I do.
So you're in a position now to take care of business, and, you know, we'll see. Just take it one race at a time like you have to, and see where it goes.
Well, we plan on just going out and running every race hard as we can go and try to win every race that we can, and where the chips fall is where they fall.
And so speaking of winning, we're going to switch gears a little bit here and go to Nashville Fairgrounds this past weekend. Bill Burba and the Modifieds of Mayhem. They had a big race up there, I believe, Saturday night. And Bill Burba, if you don't know Bill Burba, you know, look him up, because he's got a lot of his pedigree. You know, he's got a rap sheet that, as far as racing goes, goes a long way.
And, yeah, he's got a former Snowball Derby winner in the late models.
Right, with Travis Braden. Yep, correct. The Winchester 400 win, I believe, in 2016. You know, it was a great race with William Skaggs, Ricky Moxley, and Augie Grill, our favorite. You know, another favorite, Augie Grill.
I know that dude.
Yeah. The 112, of course, comes in fourth. And Cody Stickler, which we've mentioned him before, rounds out the top five in the Modified the Mayhem. And they, I believe, because of that win, Bill Burba actually took the lead for the Modified the Mayhem. And, folks, if you haven't seen the Modifieds run, they, just to me personally, they are the coolest race car other than the super late models, for sure. But the Modifieds of Mayhem, they're just nice. They're
a
bad
handful. Oh, yeah. A lot of horsepower, very little tire. They're a mess to keep under you.
They've got a lot of big names that come and run those. Hell, Bubba Pollard's won a Snowball Derby in a number 07, by the way.
All right.
And he's won several Modifieds of Mayhem races driving for that team. I can't remember who it was, but... Yeah, I'd love to let Bubba drive my car. I think that would be fun to sit out a Snowball Derby and just put a guy that's just a hell of a wheel man behind your stuff, and then let it wouldn't hurt my feelings to win a Snowball Derby with Bubba Pollard.
Nope.
Not in the least. I'd be a happy camper.
Yeah, he took the guitar from all those guys in that 50-lap modified race up there in the Music City, which it seems like the guitar is pretty much the trophy when you win anything in the air,
Nashville,
you know,
within
the vicinity of Nashville, everybody gives you a guitar.
Yeah, well, I remember Kyle Busch smashing that one-of-a-kind Les Paul. who was the guy that did all the stuff in NASCAR that died recently? It was the head artist, and he turned around and I was like,
Mike Bass?
Bass. Yeah, Sam Bass.
Sam Bass, right.
And he smashed that guitar, and I was just like, what a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, really, dude? You know, that man put all that work in, and you don't appreciate it because you think you're, you know, better than everybody else? I was like, wow. I was like, I watch that live. I'm like, dang, that's pretty crappy.
Yeah, and they're going to come back, too. So it's not over. I mean, they're going to be back at Five Flags on July 9th, and, you know, as a part of an open-wheel celebration. Hopefully, the winged sprint cars will come. I think, Ted, you mentioned before we went on, it's tentative, so they might and might not.
There is some concern, I'll put it that way.
Right.
I hope so, because I'm going to tell you something. When they brought the big dogs down here in them 410 sprint cars, let me tell you something. When it's a cool night and you can see the spray of the water off of the wing when they go down the front straightaway, and to watch one of those guys with these big, huge, hairy testicles, I had to say it, because to climb in one of those things and run wide open around a half-mile asphalt racetrack and not take your foot, because natural progressions, run the corner, lift your foot. And to hold that thing wide open for 20 laps is insane.
And do it with no brakes. I saw or heard a gentleman doing that one night. Lost his brakes on the practice lap. Ran the entire race, no brakes.
That's really insane. I watched one of them crash one night. He spun, come off four, and it seems like the car didn't move. It just whipped around, smacked the fence. Like it didn't move a foot forward. It just whipped around, hit the wall. And they asked him, said, what does that feel like? He said, stepping off of a curb and getting hit by a bus at 60 miles an hour.
That was Dave Steele.
It was Dave Steele, yeah. God rest his soul. Dave Steele's gone now.
Well, I had the opportunity to put an in-car camera in his car for qualifying. Oh, my Lord. You could hear it screaming, and all you could tell, he was just touching the brake a little bit to get it under him, and just oh, get off the brake.
To hear the thing just nyang, 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 to hear the motor just working. Those guys were nuts. And they almost got in the sub 13 second range. They were like 13.04, I think, is the track record right now. Can you imagine being under 12 seconds?
That's ridiculously fast.
Oh, man, you ain't lying. Because I remember when Randy Sweet, he's now no longer with us. The Kalamazoo Kamikaze, they called him, showed up with that car with the big wing 1 year at Snowball Derby. Somebody posted a picture of that car on Facebook, and I think the record he did at Five Flags, and Five Flags for a while was the fastest half-mile oval in America at 14.07 seconds. I remember that because he went out and they were talking about the lights might go out. And he's like, well, we already packed the fuel cell. Let's go. We got to go. And he made two laps. I think he made the third lap and the lights went out.
Oh,
I mean, and it wasn't just, oh, maybe the front stretch went out. The whole place went dark. And I'm like, scary. Whoa. Can you imagine hauling that thing off in the corner? Can't see.
Yeah, man. I've seen it foggy out there. I've seen it so badly foggy. We were shooting a race one night. And we had to wait for the cars to come out of the fog to see where they were on the track.
I remember that.
Well, if you're listening, and you can keep up with FiveFlagSpeedway.com and maybe even go to some of these other websites and check out some of the sprint cars and some of the highlights and replays, and you'll get an idea of what we're talking about. And if they do happen to make it that night, do be in the stands.
Oh, yeah. You won't regret it.
No, it's like anything you've not seen before. It is unbelievably fast. Now, I'm not saying all of them, and we're not saying all of them are flat-footed, but the guys that are going to run up front, it will blow your mind. A half mile, and they're running 12.5, 13-second laps. It's just insane.
Yeah, like I said, you got to have a pair to get in there and hold that thing wide open because your foot wants to lift, and you're just like, you got to force it. You know, it's like, that's crazy.
Well, I mean, you do have about one ton of air on top of you.
That's true. That's true. That wing pushes you down. That's for sure.
And we can roll on with that. And just keep your eyes out for the sprint cars. If they do come, get your tickets and get out there and take the kids. You'll have four or five family members that are race car drivers after they see that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And we're going to move on, I guess, and give a big shout out to, I don't know if you, the AKA Big Sexy. Anybody know who I'm talking about?
Brandon Overton.
Brandon Overton has just electrified the dirt track world in the late models at Eldora this past weekend on Friday and Saturday night, winning $273,000, winning both features.
And that race has zero slouches. And when you show up to run the dream at Eldora, it's the best of the best in every dirt late model that you can think of. Guys like Scott Blomquist, Kyle Larson, who's recently running dirt late models and kicking,
ripping them,
in the Cup Series. Yeah. And he's anything he gets in, he's won three or four sprint car races already since he's been in he win a cup race. Seems like he goes somewhere and wins a sprint car race. But that dude, man, I'm telling you, he's got to be a happy camper to win that much money and to just dominate Eldora, because Eldora is not a joke.
No.
It's one bad butt racetrack, that's for sure. And it's cool to see a guy do that, you know, especially somebody who's from Georgia. He's not, you know, a huge name in dirt late model racing, but he's known. But to do what he did, that's pretty dadgum awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there were 28 late models, and Chris Madden, Chris Ferguson, Jonathan Davenport, Daryl Lanigan, and Kyle Larson ended up running in top six, which is, I mean, in my mind, and everybody that's been keeping up with Kyle Larson's comeback with Hendrick, if you finish in front of Kyle Larson now, you brought your A game for sure.
Yeah, you definitely have to. Especially like people like Blomquist. I mean, the Bloomer, dude, he's one of the baddest late model racers there is. Jonathan Davenport, let me tell you something. I watched him at Phoenix City one time go down the front straightaway. He was running third, and he went to the outside leaders. I thought he was going to fly off the racetrack, dude. That thing hooked, and by the time he got into turn three, he was ahead by like four car lengths.
Right.
Dude, those guys can wheel those cars, and they're fun to watch, man. If you ain't ever seen a good professional dirt late model race, it's worth going.
Yeah, and I'm reading a quote now. He said, I sat with Jimmy Owens earlier, and I asked him how old he was when he won. He said, I think I was like 37. So it made him feel good. And I was like, well, dang, Jimmy Owens kicks everybody's bleep. And he's been kicking everybody's bleep for a long time now. So it keeps me hungry and makes me want to keep digging. So These guys, man, they get their hands dirty. You don't see them on Sundays. You don't see them with all the glory. But, I had to give a shout-out to Brandon Overton for doing what he did. It's just huge.
That's awesome.
to win one time the Dream at Eldora, but to win it 2 days back-to-back, because last year's the Dream was canceled, so they ran last year's race on Saturday, this year's race on Friday, and to win both of them.
Yeah,
winning one Dream is enough, but my God, how do you look at winning two back-to-back? That means they had to take that car apart Friday night, fix anything that went wrong with it, refurb it, and get it ready for Saturday, and to go out and do that again, dude, that's bad.
Right. Jimmy Owens was in it, Devin Morin, Bobby Pierce, Scott Blomquist, Ricky Thornton, Brandon Shepherd. Spencer Hughes, Shannon Babb.
Zane Smith.
Yeah, it's just a crazy field. And to go and win Friday and Saturday night, 273,000. I don't know if any 08 model drivers ever won that on dirt.
There was one at Eldora years ago, and Donnie Moran won it. It was $1 million to win. Earl Baltese, that used to run Eldora, that Tony bought from. Earl died a few years ago. But he had $1 million race, and Donnie Moran won it. And I think with taxes, I think he cleared $664,000.
Not a bad paycheck.
No. And they said, what'd you do with it? He said, well, I upgraded my shop and he built a new house. And because he had like six kids. He was feeding six children racing a dirt late model.
Wow.
Well, you can hear this, and I can hear it already, and people say, yeah, that's not a bad paycheck for a weekend. Well, let me tell you, this cat's been racing since he was, 8 years old, maybe?
Yeah.
It didn't take him a weekend to win this.
It
takes almost a lifetime for those achievements to come through, and that goes for just about every sport, if not all the sports. Yeah, don't wake up one day and say, I'm just going to go play basketball and win a championship. You start when you're young, and you work at it, and you work hard. And it pays off. So
it's part of the sport, and then money's, nowadays not so much in dirt racing as it is in asphalt, but it's all about money, and it's how much money can you bring to the table. Well, the dirt late model guys, their cars get updated every year, and Blomquist builds his own stuff, and you have to be on top of it. Cause I've seen Blomquist get his butt kicked, and I've seen Blomquist win. I've seen Tim McCready. They call him, I can't think of his nickname. But his dad was Barefoot Bob McCready, a big modified racer from up in the Northeast. And Tim McCready would come and win, and then some weeks wouldn't win. And if you follow their series, there's not a lot of repeat winners during the season. These guys may win two races in the season and finish in the top five. And the championship battle in those dirt late model series is usually really impressive also.
Yeah, you're going to have to just kind of put your butt in the seat and buckle up and work hard and win. That's just what that's what it's all about.
You got to get busy because you got to drive those things. Dirt late models drive differently, and they're neat cars, and they're fun to watch.
Well, I know you're going to get back in the shop and get that car ready, and you're going to go turn some laps tomorrow, just shake it down, make sure everything's good for Friday night, and wish you all the best. Any shout outs for both of you? What's going on with help?
Well, just got to thank Martin, my crew chief. Will, I know you're listening, dude. He's still home with a bum shoulder. It sucks we don't have him out there with us. He's one of our good crew members. We're going to lose Ben this week. So it's just going to be me, Phil, Kevin, my teammate, Brock Gentz. He's going to be racing. And I just got to thank Emerald Coast Remodeling and Trim for the tire. Ted Baber is going to hook me up with a tire this week, and then Can't Quit Fishing is going to buy my fuel, and we're going to go out there and try to win this dang thing, because we got to maintain. I want this championship, but I'm focusing on winning races, and then we'll see where the points fall when we get down to the night of the champions.
Just got to keep your head on straight and be sure that don't let anybody get under your skin.
That's hard to do in this sport.
Hey.
Especially a guy like me. I have an attitude, but, I treat everybody with respect, and I race everybody hard the way they race me. And if you want to play the destructo game, then we can play the destructo game. I would much rather race you and bang fenders. And, you have people out there that if you touch their car on the side, they get mad. I'm like, dude, it's racing. If we want to just ride around 10 inches apart, then we should just ride around 10 inches apart. We're going to swap paint. You know, if you want to keep a pretty race car, that's one thing, but it's going to get beat up in a street stock division.
Yeah, keep it in the garage.
Yeah, park it. Don't race it. You know, I mean, I want to race. I want to, I mean, I don't mind swapping paint. You can push me around a little bit, but if you do me dirty, remember, it's stored in the back of the old brain, and there's going to come a time when you're going to get crossed up in front of me, and I'm going to go, oops.
Yeah. So didn't see that happening.
Oh, that was me. Sorry.
My fault. I did that one.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't know, man. That's pretty awesome stuff.
And so we love the sport, man. That's what this is about, dude. I love doing this podcast. I love driving race cars. It's something I wanted to do since I was 9 years old. And, you know, it's cool that I've got a stack of trophies to show that I actually did pretty good when I did their piles of plastic and wood. And their my ex used to call them dust catchers, but I don't care. I've kept every one of them because it's just neat to me. And Thomas, you know, man, it's a cool feeling getting on that front straightaway, watching that green flag fall, and then watching the checkered. And, you know, it's just all about the sport.
It is
what it's about.
It is. It's about the participation and the adrenaline and the excitement. And I don't know how else to explain it. And you wouldn't understand it really if you didn't get in the seat and start the car and roll out on the track and just feel the energy, your heart rate it's intense.
The anticipation.
It's intense. I mean, it hit me. I mean, right off the bat. I think it was three or four races when I got in, and it hit me. This is real. This is real. I mean, this is not make believe. So it's a good sport, and it's hard, but it's good.
Well, you want to keep kids off the streets and off of drugs. Start a program where we can put kids working on race cars. Because it keeps them busy, keeps their mind focused. And let me tell you something, you own a race car, you ain't got money for drugs because you're spending all your dimes. Every little thing you can do to go race, because there's times I've actually gone to the coin thing and dumped it in to get fuel so I could go race. I'm not kidding. I'm a no-budget racer. But, you know, like I said, thankful to my sponsors that helped me out and people that I've met, like Ted and you. That's one of the things that's so awesome about this sport is just making friends.
It's a family. It's a dysfunctional family sometimes.
But. Oh, yeah. You got cousins you hate, and you're just like, all right, dirt bag over there. But, I mean, it's all part of the sport, and we all help each other. You know, I want to tell you a story that I heard. It was on the Dale Jr. Download, and they were talking about when Davey Allison, or when Ernie Irvin got hurt at Michigan. This is back in the 90s. A lot of people may not know what I'm talking about, but look it up. Ernie Irvin got hurt, and they were battling Dale Earnhardt for the championship. And the three boys went to the 28 truck, got their backup car out, rolled it into the garage, and put it on jack stands for him. So when they got done at the hospital checking on Ernie, they could come back and go race the next day. I mean, what kind of sport does that? You other football teams, when a guy breaks a leg, you know, the other team don't go over and carry him off the field. But we help each other. We give each other parts. We might be rivals, but we're going to help one another. It's a family. I love it. I'm just going to tell you. Well, you can hear it in my voice.
Yeah, we love it. And we love getting together and putting this out there. And we look forward to next week and another episode. And you guys, it's been a blast. And Ted Baber Video Productions, look him up. He's got the email on our Facebook, which is Short Track Guys Podcast on Facebook. Jim, your email address?
JBP07@hotmail.com. And also, please give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us a good rating on Spotify. Put a comment in. Help us grow. Help us get bigger, because we're gonna expand this. We're gonna make it better. But please, if you would, that would help us a lot. Drop me a line with any suggestions. Hey, we'll try to make things better. We want this to do better, not just for us, but for you guys also.
Right. Yeah, we're doing the local and the regional and national level, we're trying to touch on everything. So for race fans out there that are familiar with what we're talking about, but then for new listeners that stumble across us that are, we're basically on all the major platforms.
Yes.
With podcasts. So Short Track Guys Podcast on Facebook. Leave us a message. We'll be more than happy to listen and hear and respond. And just listen to where you listen to all your podcasts, because we're available. Short Track Guys. Short Track Guys Podcast is on Facebook page, but Short Track Guys is through all the platforms. And Ted, Jim, it's always been a pleasure, and it always will be. And we will check you guys in next Wednesday.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Good night, everybody.